Good afternoon, and welcome to the Green Thumb Show. I'm Lee Murray, your reader for Sun Sounds of Arizona. Thanks for joining us. From BetterHomesAndGardens.com, 17 fruit and vegetable scraps you shouldn't toss, and what to do with them instead. From leaves to stems and seeds, these solutions will help you reduce food waste while increasing the flavor of your meals, by Carla Walsh. Have you peeked at your grocery receipts lately? Food prices continue to rise year after year. The pint of strawberries you once paid $4 for 5 years ago now costs around $5. This doesn't sound substantial until you consider the impact on your entire cart and realize that the average household wastes about 32% of all food that enters the home. In addition to being a burden on Mother Nature, this wasted food adds up fast, to the tune of $1,500 per household each year. Composting can help ameliorate the environmental impact, but the Environmental Protection Agency estimates that a mere 4% of wasted food is composted. The rest ends up in landfills, the sewer system, or combustion facilities. There's no need to get down in the dumps about this scenario of rising food prices and widespread food waste. We're digging up savvy chef tips to help you conquer the largest source of food waste: produce. And the experts are Dane Baldwin, the chef owner of The Diplomat in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Sarah Brecky, MS, is the Better Homes and Gardens Test Kitchen brand manager. Yara Herrera is a chef partner at Hellbender Nighttime Cafe in New York City. And Kate Williams, the chef owner of the no-waste restaurant Lady of the House in Detroit, Michigan. Food scraps you can eat? Don't throw these away. There's extra nutrients and flavor hanging out in a lot of the parts of fruits and vegetables you might normally toss. Although I can't say everything in the fruit and vegetable world is edible, most things are, says Herrera. My rule of thumb is always ask yourself if this is truly trash. Challenge yourself to reduce waste and get creative. If you can't repurpose it, composting is always the best alternative. You have the green light to eat all of the fruit and vegetable scraps listed here. If you have any questions about whether other produce scraps are safe to consume, check the websites of the FDA or ReFed, a nonprofit focused on reducing food waste. Please always wash your produce well before eating, especially if you plan to consume the skins or peels, advises Brecky. Apple peels and cores. Discard those not great to eat seeds, then use the core and the peels to simmer down to jam or apple butter to spread in sandwiches and use on charcuterie boards. You can even add peels to your morning fruit smoothie. Asparagus ends. If you slice off the woody ends or use a vegetable peeler to thin thicker stalks, save those asparagus extras to make a delightful spring soup, Baldwin says. The ends, made for creamy soups like our creamy potato and asparagus soup, since you can blitz them into a more appealing texture. Cooking also helps mellow out the sometimes bitter flavor. Broccoli stems. Just like you can eat broccolini from flora to end, broccoli stems are absolutely edible. After you've used the florets in your favorite broccoli recipes, use a vegetable peeler to remove the tough outer skin of the stems, then slice them to add to stir-fries, fried rice, or soups, like this five-star copycat Panera broccoli cheddar soup that reviewers deem so easy and delicious. Carrot tops. Replace some or all of the fresh basil in your favorite pesto recipe with carrot tops, then toss that pesto with pasta, spoon it over steak or chicken, use it as a salad dressing, or drizzle it over roasted carrots for a root-to-stem side dish. You can also dice and toss them into salads. Celery leaves. We believe celery is one of the most underrated veggies, but the leaves pack major flavor and deserve their due, too. Add them to pesto or use them as a garnish for vegetable side dishes and salads. Citrus peels and juiced flesh. Don't discard those juiced lemon halves. Instead, Brecky suggests stealing a test kitchen trick. We save our lemons after juicing so that we can run them in our garbage disposal, she says. The skins are full of brightly aromatic natural oils that will deodorize your sink, and the tough skins will also help to rub off any gunk that is built up in the disposal. After you use the flesh of oranges, lemons, limes, or grapefruit for wedges, supremes, or juicing, you can dehydrate the peels. Once dry, use a spice grinder or coffee grinder to blitz them into a fine powder. Mix with salt or sugar to rim a cocktail glass, lime salt margarita anyone, or to use as a dusting on sugar cookies, fruit tarts, or creme brulee. Corn cobs. Once you've shucked and trimmed the kernels from the cob, place the cobs in a pot of water and simmer this into a broth, William suggests. Use 2 cups of water for every 1 corn cob, add 1/4 onion and a handful of fresh herbs. Bring to a boil, then simmer for 1 hour and strain. The result is sweet, slightly creamy, and full of corn flavor, William says, and is dreamy, stirred into polenta, soups and stews, pastas, or skillet recipes. Green onion roots. One of our favorite fruit and vegetable scrap tricks of all is to grow new produce from parts you might normally toss, which you can do with green onion roots for a never-ending supply. Herb stems. The stems of tender, fresh herbs like cilantro, parsley, basil, mint, and dill taste just as incredible, and sometimes even more powerfully herbaceous than the leaves. Finely chop them and use them alongside the leaves. What are your stems found on tougher herbs like thyme, rosemary, sage, and oregano, especially when they're more mature, are best to discard, though, Brecky says. Leafy green vegetable stems. True, the stems of sturdy, leafy greens, including Swiss chard, collard, kale, and mustard greens, aren't always pleasant to eat in salads or sautés. But those same stems are briny, tender, and a tasty addition to sandwiches or relishes once you pickle them. Try them as part of a garlicky pickled mixed veggie blend. Mushroom stems. The caps of mushrooms come in clutch for stuffed mushrooms and pan sauces, but don't sleep on the stems. Dice shroom stems to add to fried rice, beef wellington, and bread stuffing. Or make a umami-rich mushroom broth with dried mushrooms and stems. Onion and garlic skins. Label a freezer zip-top bag broth and fill it with scraps as you cook. Among the most flavorful things to infuse, the skins and trimmings from all types of onions and garlic. Feel free to add any other trimmings or odds and ends before they're past their prime to preserve them until you're ready to make a batch of homemade vegetable broth. Potato peels. Potato peels are prime contenders for stock as well. Brecky also likes turning them into chips. Toss them with oil and bake or deep fry for a snack, she says, or just leave the potato peels on the spuds. The same holds true for many other root vegetables, including carrots and sweet potatoes. There's no need to peel any of these items if you wash and scrub them clean. Squash seeds. You're probably familiar with the fact that you can roast and savor pumpkin seeds. The same holds true for the seeds of other varieties of squash, including acorn and butternut. Our roasted pumpkin seeds recipe asks for just 15 minutes of hands-on time. Radish tops. As long as they're not wilted or too dinged up, use the radish top to make a twist on green goddess dressing, Baldwin recommends. Blanch the tops, squeeze them dry, then incorporate them into the herb mixture to your favorite green goddess recipe. We love a combo that includes 1/2 avocado, 1/2 cup buttermilk, 1/4 cup plain Greek yogurt, 1 grated garlic clove, 1/4 cup fresh herbs or blanched radish tops, 1 teaspoon anchovy paste, and a squeeze of lemon. Season to taste. Strawberry tops. You may trim off the stem end of strawberries on autopilot at this point. If so, here's a fact that will save you time and food waste. You could eat the leaves. Remove them if you're cooking the berries, as they'll turn a not-so-appetizing green-black hue. Otherwise, you can use them in smoothies, salads, and sauces. Watermelon rinds. When peak watermelon season blissfully arrives, we're often so busy celebrating and savoring the flesh that we almost overlook the rind. No longer. Since we perfected the best pickled watermelon recipe, not a melon goes by that we don't make the most of. Both the white flesh and the green rind are prime candidates for pickling, then featuring in cocktails or lemonade as part of a cheese bowls or boards, and incorporating into salads. Well, there you go. Here's a column that appeared recently in the Arizona Republic. Here's what kind of bugs come out in spring in Arizona. By Tiffany Acosta. Spring officially begins on March 20th, 2025, bringing warmer temperatures, blooming flowers, and an influx of bugs to Metro Phoenix. As the Sonoran Desert heats up, many insects emerge from dormancy, becoming more active in backyards, parks, and hiking trails. Arizona is home to a vast array of insects, from beautiful butterflies to pesky mosquitoes and venomous bark scorpions. While some, like honeybees and lacewings, are beneficial pollinators, others, such as mosquitoes and paper wasps, can be nuisances or even pose health risks. Whether you're an outdoor enthusiast or just want to know what's buzzing around your home, here's your guide to identifying common insects you'll see in spring in Arizona. What kind of bugs come out in Arizona in spring? In March, you're likely to see buzzing bees pollinating newly bloomed flowers and colorful butterflies dotting garden foliage. Here's what to look for according to the University of Arizona's Cooperative Extension. Argentine ants, small brown ants that form extensive colonies. Commonly found in urban areas, they are not directly harmful, but can invade homes and disrupt ecosystems. Harvester ants, medium-sized reddish-brown to black ants known for large colonies and seed harvesting behavior. They are found in arid regions and can deliver painful stings. White-line sphinx moths, large moth with brownish-gray wings and prominent white stripes. Found in various habitats, these moths are important pollinators and harmless to humans and pets. Painted lady butterfly, medium-sized butterfly with orange-brown wings and black-white spots. Found in gardens and meadows, they are harmless and beneficial pollinators. Honeybees, small bees with golden-yellow bodies. These bees are important for pollination and honey production. They are not aggressive, but can sting if provoked and are potentially dangerous to those allergic. Paper wasps, medium-sized wasps with brown bodies and yellow markings. These wasps build paper-like nests and can sting repeatedly if provoked. The painful stings may cause allergic reactions. Mosquitoes, small flying insects found in areas near standing water. Females feed on blood, transmit diseases, deliver itchy bites, and are potentially dangerous to humans and pets. Lace wings, delicate insects with transparent wings and green or brown bodies. These beneficial predators feed on garden pests and are harmless to humans and pets. Citrus thrips, tiny insects with fringed wings. They feed on citrus leaves and fruits and are found in citrus orchards. They are not harmful to humans or pets, but they can damage crops. Western tent caterpillars. Caterpillars with black bodies and white, yellow, blue markings. They are not harmful to people, but they can defoliate the trees they build their tents in and can damage landscapes. Grape flea beetles, small black beetles with enlarged hind legs for jumping. They are found in vineyards and feed on grape leaves. They are not harmful to humans or pets, but can damage crops. Monarch butterflies, large butterfly with bright orange wings and black veins, found in gardens and along migration routes. They are harmless and crucial for pollination. Start migrating north from their wintering grounds in Mexico around March. Arizona bark scorpions, small pale yellow scorpions that hide in crevices and under rocks and are attracted to water. They are venomous and their sting is painful and can be harmful to some people. They start emerging from winter hiding spots in March, though peak activity is in summer. Finally, no-see-ums, or biting midges, tiny, nearly invisible flying insects found in moist environments. Their bites cause intense itching, but they do not transmit diseases in Arizona. Over at Desert Botanical Garden, don't forget the spring plant sale going on today until 3, tomorrow 7 a.m. to 3 p.m. Last entry at 2. Bring the magic of the desert into your garden or green space. Explore our expansive collection of 30,000 desert-adapted plants at the Spring Plant Sale. Expert advice and a picturesque outdoor shopping experience await. Give your landscape a dreamy makeover this spring. Also at Desert Botanical Garden, Orchid Fever. Witness a lush desert oasis. The garden is excited to host its first ever Orchid Fever exhibit, presented by Barton Faber and Elizabeth Burns in the new RAF Exhibit Gallery. Learn about the stunning variety of orchids you'll find at the show. Read about the garden's critical conservation work for a rare orchid species in Arizona, and deepen your appreciation for these breathtaking plants by joining one of our engaging adult education classes. Orchid Fever is included with general admission running through May 11th. Adult Plus Orchid Fever ticket covers general admission into the garden and faster access into Orchid Fever. Now here are some orchid plant care tips by Garden Blog from Desert Botanical Garden. Most orchids available at grocery stores or nurseries are likely moth orchids. These plants demand minimal care and produce an abundance of beautiful flowers, making them an ideal choice for novice collectors. The garden's horticulture department compiled a few essential tips to help you successfully grow moth orchids. First, after acquiring your orchid, it is important to repot it immediately once it is finished flowering. Typically, orchids purchased at nurseries or grocery stores are grown in sphagnum moss, which tends to retain excessive moisture for the plant. Next, carefully take the orchid out of the pot and detach the sphagnum moss from its roots. If the roots appear brown or black and feel mushy, it's best to remove them. Next, soak the plant roots in a mixture of water and a bactericide solution. Allow the roots to soak for 10 minutes. Fourth, you can either reuse the original pot of the orchid or choose a different one, but ensure that it has plenty of drainage holes. Fifth, the potting medium needs to be porous. You can opt for either a coarse bark specifically formulated for orchids or a product known as Aliflor or Leca, which is an expanded clay material. This type of medium is commonly utilized to prevent excessive watering. Sixth, carefully position the plant roots in the pot, then fill it with a soil medium. Utilize a chopstick to press the potting medium down, ensuring it makes good contact with the roots. Next, after potting your orchid, it's best to position it near an east-facing window for optimal growth. Shaded south or west windows are also suitable. Additionally, orchids can thrive under artificial lighting. Just ensure that the light bulb or LED provides more than 10,000 lumens to promote flowering. Number 8, since Phalaenopsis lacks water storage organs apart from the leaves, it's essential that they never fully dry out. Be sure to water plants thoroughly and only water again when the potting media is nearly dry. Ensure that water drains away from the pot. Ninth, when your orchid is in bloom, it's essential to maintain moist soil media as this will help to extend the duration of its flowering. And lastly, remember to fertilize your plants. For bark-based and clay media, apply a balanced fertilizer such as 10-10-10 twice a month. To encourage flowering, opt for a high phosphorus fertilizer like 10-30-20. Always adhere to the instructions provided on the fertilizer package. From BetterHomesAndGardens.com, these are the 7 best trees to plant in spring, according to experts. Get expert tips on which trees are the best for planting in spring, plus why it matters, by Luke Miller. Although most trees can be planted throughout the growing season, some are best planted in spring to ensure they get a strong start. Both your climate and the tree's characteristics play a part in making spring the best time to plant these trees. This guide explains all the factors to consider, according to tree experts. You'll also find essential tips and insights into why the planting time matters, and you'll get expert recommendations for specific types of trees to plant in spring. The best time to plant trees. While trees can technically be planted any time the ground is unfrozen, some seasons work better than others. Both spring and fall tend to have cooler temperatures, which reduces moisture loss as trees absorb water in their roots and evaporate water through their leaves in a process called evapotranspiration, says Eric North, an arborist who manages the Urban Forestry Program for the Arbor Day Foundation. With some trees, however, spring is the clear winner. Flowering and deciduous trees in general are nice to plant in the spring to give them a full growing season before going dormant in the fall, North says. The following spring, the trees are more apt to produce flowers and possibly fruit. Types of trees to plant in spring. There are a few general guidelines on what types of trees are best planted in spring, according to Sharon Yisla, a horticulturalist who answers questions from the public for the Morton Arboretum's Plant Clinic. She recommends spring planting for trees that have coarse, fleshy, or sparse roots, such as hornbeam and magnolia. Have long taproots, such as hickory trees and many oaks. Take longer to establish, such as evergreen trees. Have thin bark, such as birch and cherry. Are not locally grown and may need more time to adjust to the new climate. are marginally hardy in your region and were recently transplanted. Getting to the root of the matter, Yisla points out that the condition of your tree's roots should be factored into the best time to plant. For trees that may be better planted in spring due to root issues, container-grown plants will have more flexibility in terms of planting time because you get the whole root system with a plant that was grown in the container. Conversely, bald and burlap trees lose a fair amount of their roots when dug up, so they need more time to adapt. Bare root trees are perhaps the most sensitive to seasonal fluctuations. Trees are dug out of the field in the fall and stored in large coolers until they're able to be shipped in the spring, says North. The digging process cuts most of the tree's roots, leaving the roots in the field. Spring planting gives bare root trees an entire growing season to replenish the root system before winter. It's important to plant these types of trees after frost has left the ground, but before buds begin to swell in anticipation of new growth. That's because fewer resources are available for root growth when stems are actively growing. Even container-grown specimens with fully intact root systems can benefit from spring planting because it provides more time for root growth. More roots helps trees better withstand the heat and drought of summer and the dryness and cold of winter. Best trees to plant in spring. Yisla recommends planting these particular trees in spring rather than any other time of the year to help them get off to a strong start. First, American hornbeam. American hornbeam has deep, coarse, lateral roots. Once planted, it's difficult to transplant elsewhere because its roots don't do well with disturbance. This native understory tree slowly grows about 30 feet tall and prefers a partly shaded spot, but will accept full sun. It offers fiery fall color and interesting smooth gray bark. It's hardy in zones 3 through 9. Number 2, ginkgo. Ginkgo transplants easily but may take longer to establish itself. An ancient species dating to the time of the dinosaurs, ginkgo has unique fan-shaped leaves that turn buttery yellow in fall and have an interesting tendency to drop all at once. It is adaptable to different soils and has few pest or disease issues. Ginkgo grows 50 to 80 feet tall, although smaller cultivars are available, and is hardy in zones 3 through 8 and sometimes zone 9. Next is magnolia. Magnolia has fleshy roots that are sparse and sometimes deep, and trees will drop a lot of interior leaves from shock if transplanted. There are many species of magnolia, from 80-foot tall forest trees to small, graceful specimen trees under 10 feet for the home landscape, along with countless hybrids of varying size, habit, and flower color. The hardiness range for magnolias in general spans 3 through 9, but many species and cultivars have a narrower hardiness range. Number 4 is Canadian hemlock. Canadian hemlock has shallow roots. It could be easily damaged in transplanting. A beautiful dark green giant with a pyramidal habit and gracefully drooping branches, Canadian hemlock grows up to 70 feet tall. However, smaller cultivars are available with mounded, upright, globular, or weeping habits, also called eastern hemlock. The species is hardy in zones 3 through 7. Sweet gum, number 5. Sweet gum features a deep taproot and fleshy roots that can be slow to reestablish after planting. The spiny seed pods and star-shaped leaves are defining characteristics of the sweet gum tree, particularly the latter when they turn a handsome mix of red, purple, and yellow tones. Sweet gum grows 60 to 75 feet tall and is hardy in zones 5 through 9. Tulip tree is next. Tulip tree roots are flesh and sparse. A tree of magnificent proportions, reaching up to 90 feet tall, tulip tree needs plenty of room to grow, but rewards its caretaker with greenish yellow and orange tulip-like flowers in late spring and leaves that turn buttery yellow in fall. There are cultivars with variegated leaves, as well as some that have unique or more compact growth habits. Tulip tree is hardy in zones 4 through 9. And number 7 is yellowwood. American yellowwood has deep, coarse lateral roots. A mid-sized tree growing 30 to 50 feet tall with a similar spread, it features smooth, gray bark year-round. While flowering can fluctuate year to year, when it does bloom, American yellowwood produces 1-foot-long pendulous chains of fragrant white flowers in late spring. It also boasts bright green summer foliage followed by attractive yellow fall coloring. American yellowwood is hardy in zones 4 through 8. And those of you who are regular listeners to this show know we feature stories each week for the terrific book called Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. This is called Garden Meditations. It was written by the Reverend Max Coutts. And there is a quote here from Samuel Taylor Coleridge. Friendship is a sheltering tree. Garden Meditations. Let us give thanks for a bounty of people, for children who are our second planting, and though they grow like weeds and the wind too soon blows them away, may they forgive us our cultivation and fondly remember where their roots are. Let us give thanks for generous friends with hearts and smiles as bright as their blossoms, for feisty friends as tart as apples, for continuous friends who, like scallions and cucumbers, keep reminding us that we've had them, for crotchety friends, sour as rhubarb and as indestructible, for handsome friends who are as gorgeous as eggplants and as elegant as a row of corn, and the others as plain as potatoes and so good for you, for funny friends who are as silly as Brussels sprouts and as amusing as Jerusalem artichokes, and serious friends as unpretentious as cabbages, as subtle as summer squash, as persistent as parsley, as delightful as dill, as endless as zucchini, and who, like parsnips, can be counted on to see you through the winter. For old friends, nodding like sunflowers in the evening time, and young friends, coming on as fast as radishes. For loving friends, who wind around us like tendrils and hold us despite our blights, wilts, and witherings. And finally, for those friends now gone, like gardens past that have been harvested, but who fed us in their time that we might have life thereafter. For all these, we give thanks. That's called Garden Meditations, written by Reverend Max Coutts, one of the many stories that make up Chicken Soup for the Gardener's Soul. And that's the Green Thumb Show for this week. For Sun Sounds Radio, I'm Lee Murray, your reader. Thanks for joining us. Have a great week. Be safe and healthy, and we'll be talking with you soon.